Welcome. I'm Danielle Sally.
And I'm Eva Foussaud.
And you're listening to Ghost Boss, stories about the freelance afterlife. Hey, ghosties.
Hi.
How are you, Eva?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So I got a little bit of a non-pod related gripe.
Oh, let's hear it.
I want you to help me figure out how to do this.
Let's see if I agree with you.
I am mad at my Apple Watch.
Yeah.
I've had it for a long time.
Yes.
I want to break up with it because I think it's ugly.
Yeah.
And there's no bands that make it not ugly.
Yeah.
But like now I'm like conditioned like Pavlov's dog to be excited about closing my rings.
Yes.
And so I texted our friend Whitney about it last week and she had no solution for me. She's like, I also agree it's ugly.
We all agree.
So what are we doing?
We are leaving it on our wrist. You know what bothers me the most though is when I'm at a nice event and I should take it off.
Oh, this ugly thing was in every photo at our gala in February.
And so, sometimes I try to think through. And so when I went to the Advertising Hall of Fame, I'm like, okay, these photos are going to live forever. I will not wear it to, because I already hit my, but then, I already closed the rings.
Do you not have a tan line? I have a tan line for mine.
Oh, I have a horrible tan line, but I'll just cover that in makeup. The fact that I even have to cover my wrist in makeup says a lot, but I was like, I'm not going to wear it. And then I just forgot to take it off. And then I was like, oh, now it's in every photo. But if I haven't closed my rings, I am wearing that to that black tie event because I need to close my rings.
I'm just mad at it. I used to have a long time ago, a Fitbit and it was like a little clip.
Yeah.
And I just clipped it.
I had this real cute one. What was it called? It was called like the Leaf. I can't remember who made it. And it like you could wear it around your neck. It was like this wooden leaf with metal on it. It was real cute. And it just had a battery in it. It wasn't like all it did was kind of like track your steps, your movement and all that. And you could wear it as a bracelet. You could wear it as a leaf or a necklace. No one would know it was a fitness device. Mm-hmm. And I really liked it. But then I, you know, wanted more.
Yeah. Here I am. I'm mad at it.
Well, God, my wrist, like, do you like, you have that permanent circle on your wrist now? It's really annoying.
Yeah, I do. I do have the permanent wrist. Now, one time I had to get rid of my Apple Watch. This was several generations ago.
Yeah.
It burned my wrist.
Oh my.
I had like a burn on my wrist.
Man.
From wearing it.
Mm-hmm. That's not good.
So then I didn't wear one for 2 or 3 years. This one I've had for a while and it's been fine.
But it's just ugly. It burned you and you're like, I'm going to go back.
I waited three years. Yeah. I probably have pictures of where it like burned my wrist.
Yeah.
It's the metal part of it. And then this is another problem I have. The watch itself doesn't break my wrist out, but I have a nickel allergy.
Mm.
So most band options I have outside of like, this is just like a stretchy band. Most band options for me.
Yeah.
Will break out my wrist. So any of the stuff that looks a little bit nicer probably has metal on it that I can't wear.
Yeah.
And then the sports band that it comes with, mm-hmm. that'll break my wrist out.
Yeah.
So like,
that's the thing. And I use the sports band that it comes with and I like it because if I'm working out, like I want something that like sweat's not going to be an issue, but it does. It kind of makes you break out.
Yeah.
A little bit.
That one does. These are fine. I finally found some bands that I like, but, I might break up with my Apple Watch.
Oh my. The problem is I don't feel like I can, that I can't support you.
I know. Whitney said the same thing. Whitney said the same thing to me. So I don't know. I don't like how it looks.
Yeah.
I've been doing
what would you do?
Nothing.
Oh, ooh.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Wild.
What would I need instead?
How are you going to try? You're going to track your steps? How do you know if you exercise? Well, that's the holdup. I thought you meant, what am I going to do so I know what time it is?
Forget time. Who uses it for time?
I used to have like a nice like rose gold watch, like with a big face. I really liked it for a long time. I don't remember if that was before or after.
Yeah.
I don't know. I used to have one, like a nice watch and I liked it. Maybe I'll go back to something like that. But no, probably nothing.
Wild.
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 Fascinating.
Fascinating. If you have any thoughts on my Apple Watch and how flipping ugly it is.
It's just
or
ugly.
Maybe someone who has also felt this way and was able to get to the other side can help coach you through.
Coach you through the withdrawal that will go through.
Ugly. Can I just hook it to
I don't know.
Your ankle?
No.
I did order some anklets last night.
Okay, maybe this is your new thing. Wearing ankle.
I do. They're cute and dainty. They are not big and bulky like this.
They're in the manufacturing world, and so that you can't wear. Yeah. You can't wear them there. That they will put it on their ankles just to get the steps.
I don't know. Anyways,
yeah.
Eva's mad at her Apple Watch.
It's okay.
So
what are we talking about today?
We're talking about ugly design. Speaking of my Apple Watch, or more accurately, design mistakes. So
okay, yeah.
We've done an episode on like lessons learned, but that was like big, broad business lessons learned. I want to tell y'all about the dumb stuff that I've done in my career.
Yeah.
Stuff that you just don't learn it till you go do it.
Yeah.
So I realized a lot of my examples are print examples.
Well, that's where we mess up a lot.
That's right? Where we mess up a lot and it's harder to fix.
Yeah. Like web's a fluid thing. If it's something wrong, you just go in there and fix it.
So I have four to start with.
Let's go.
And then
I'm going to see if I've done them before.
Well, that's the thing.
I bet I have.
And it might also jar some memories of other stuff you've done.
Sometimes you come up with topics and I don't think I have much to contribute. And then we get into it. I'm like, oh, you've unlocked the memories.
Yeah, you do. So we're going to start. And I'm just going to run through these and then, just jump in. All right. So a long time ago, I did a print project and I had this like skinny little rule line at the top of all the pages.
Yeah.
Like a hairline. Yeah. It was just for aesthetic purposes. There was no other reason than that. And the printer, I had like 1,000 of these printed and there's like, I don't know, 36 pages in each one. And the printer like almost lost their mind because getting those signatures to exactly line up was like a nightmare.
Yeah.
And my design manager, I think I'd done it. She was new and I'd maybe done it before she was there. I don't remember, but she looked at it and she was like, do not ever do that ever again, because it doesn't actually improve the design either like functionally or like aesthetically. I mean, it was fine.
Yeah.
She's like, but it creates so many like problems in the design process. And now like even in something that's probably never going to be printed, I'm hesitant to put like header or footer lines.
Yeah.
And if I do, I don't drag them into the gutter. Like I make them stay on their page.
Yeah, sure.
So that was one thing.
Okay.
If you're a newer designer, you may have no idea what I'm talking about with this.
Yeah, they're probably like,
do this. So I once had a print project and I picked out I was real big into spot varnishes for a while.
Same girl.
Right. Real big into a spot varnish. And then I picked this really, I love an uncoated sheet.
Yeah.
I now love a soft touch.
Yeah.
But for a long minute, I was into an uncoated sheet and I picked out this uncoated sheet and I paid all this money for the spot varnish. And then I went to the press check and I was like, why can't you see it? And they're like, I guess like the aqueous coat, like it soaked it all up.
Oh my.
So you couldn't see it?
You would think that.
I thought somebody would have flagged that sooner.
Okay. So that's what I was going to say. Why was that not flagged? Sometimes I'm
in production.
As a designer, like we're thinking all these cool out of the box things. And I'm like, if I'm a production person and a designer gave me this and I'm like, that's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I not say that before? Like, we trust you. Uh-huh. We trust you. Uh-huh.
Maybe it wasn't even at the press. Actually, you know what? It wasn't at the press check, because why would I press check a spot varnish? I know where the spot varnish is going.
Yeah, that's
fair. I got the box full of finals back and I called them. I was like, where's the spot varnish? And they're like, oh, it's on there.
Oh, no.
Uh-huh.
No. Yeah.
I don't remember who that was. So.
Oh, that is frustrating.
Yeah. So that happened.
So check your paper.
Check your paper.
Paper stock.
Or ask your printer.
Ask your printer.
Yeah. Before. This was a very long time ago. So I like telling this story. I get very excited when I get a print project.
Yeah.
I don't get them much anymore.
Yeah.
And so this was before I was working for myself. So this is probably 6 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
Ish.
Right.
So I love a roll fold.
A roll fold?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
So like it's when it rolls up in itself. So like it's a bunch of panels and it rolls in.
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
So I love a roll fold.
Yeah.
And I had this project and I think there were like 8 or 9 panels and it was all the same information. So like it was comparing a bunch of different initiatives and projects. So like every page had like a little money icon for like how much it saved or how much it costs. And then like a little icon about like, you know, what health disparity,
and
like a paragraph, and I had a picture and I was really proud of it. And I was very excited about doing this big roll fold for it. So I designed this thing and I mock it up and it's 9 panels front and back.
Yeah.
And I take it to the printer and they called me and they're like, so they don't make press sheets this big.
Oh no.
It's like, what? And they're like, they don't make, we have.
Would you do go to an outdoor company?
No. Good question. They're like, they don't make press sheets this big. And they were like, even if we switch your paper, because at this point, also old designer here.
Yeah.
When I first started, you would spec your paper very specifically.
Yeah.
And like I found as like in the last like 5 to 8 years, you tell them loosely what you want.
Yeah. I have.
It's harder to get like.
It is interesting. I remember it used to have to be extremely specific about my paper choice.
Yes.
And especially much more recently, you know, there was a paper shortage for a while.
Yes, there was.
So it's just like. Whatever you get.
I need a 70-pound uncoated sheet.
If you have something along these lines, that'd be super.
Right. And a lot of times it's about, well, how much do you need? So I had that problem. I've had that problem in the last 5 years. Like, I'll tell them what I need. Even with business cards, I'm running into this problem. They got to go calculate the run.
Yeah.
And then I'll come to this one second. So I'll finish the roll fold story. So yeah, I had, they were like, what are you gonna do? And it was only off by like, I don't know, not a ton.
Yeah.
Not a ton, but there were, it was a full bleed. And so I had to go back and take, I don't know, 3/4 of an inch off every panel.
Yeah.
But like with a roll fold, every panel's a different size so it can roll in on itself.
Oh man.
And not like be funny. And so then I had
to adjust every single one.
And I had to reset all the type because I had to bring, maybe it wasn't 3, but it was like less than an inch I had to bring in at all. And so I had to reset all the margins.
Yeah.
I remember, I know exactly what year this was. It was 2015. Yeah. So that was that.
Oh man.
This came up in the last 2 years. I printed some business cards and the proofs, we had them run real proofs.
Yeah.
Like a real, we booked the press, like a real proof,
right,
with a PMS color, and the client approved the proof. And then we get the business cards themselves back. And the client was like, they feel not as heavy as the proof.
Yeah.
I was like, well, that's odd. And I took it to the printer and they're like, this is a first. The paper grain's a different direction. We ran it one way just because we ran it one way.
Yeah.
And then when we ganged them up on a sheet.
Oh no.
We turned the paper the opposite way. And I was like, well, can you fix it? He's like, no, because the paper has to be fed into the machine in that direction.
Oh my goodness.
Like, I've never had anybody notice the paper grain direction.
Especially when it changed the weight
of
the paper.
It was interesting because that, I don't know that like designers would notice that sort of thing, but the client noticed it. And so I was like,
well, and sometimes that's what matters.
Yeah, right? No, it was fine. It was fine. But like the printer was like, I've literally never had anybody. It was the paper grain. And I was like, so how do we fix it? And he goes, well, here's the problem, Eva. Like, we already have a hard enough time getting enough paper to do almost anything these days.
Yeah.
There's no way for me to spec paper, like the grain direction.
Yeah.
He was like, we can order more and open the box and hope it's in the right direction. It was, so that was interesting.
Wild, wild.
And then the only other thing I had, this is actually not print related.
Yeah.
So I was working on a project to like, it was like a program.
Yeah.
And I was not as good then about checking like ADA compliance.
Yeah.
I'm much better about it now.
Sure.
This was like 4 years.
There's also much better tools.
There's much better tools
now.
And it's more of the conversation now. So I was doing this project for a government agency. So they were certainly, it's kind of like when you do work in healthcare, they're the first people to make sure
some of this
stuff with ADA compliance is happening. So I do this whole branding project and I didn't think to check the colors.
Yeah.
And then we get to the very end and they've selected what they like. And then we have to change one of the colors because it wasn't ADA compliant.
Yeah.
That is not the palette I chose.
It's tough too.
Yeah.
I had one client that, you know, they had their brand palette and they had a red in there that it was not going to be ADA compliant.
Okay.
And I was able to adjust it so that it was going to pass ADA compliance test.
Yeah.
And so I did have to adjust the red, and it's so tough for a designer, right? To have to adjust the brand color. But then I went back to him like, can we say this is your web red version?
I have something like that.
Your brand red, this will be used for print, but if used in web, and it was another government agency. So I was like, we need to use this red if it's going to be used on your website.
Yes.
And once that was explained, they were open to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I do check. Adobe has a really cool web tool to check all ADA compliance.
It does now. I don't think it did three or four years ago.
It's a more recent thing, but it's a really great tool. And when I'm working on a branding project, sometimes I'll go in and check, especially, you know, when you're building out your brand palette. And you need to think about, you know, what text color is going on top of which colors, because not every color is going to be able to work on top of another color. So at least then you can go ahead and see if it passed or not.
Yeah.
Before you start building it into your brand.
Yeah. When I have conversations, I have two things to bounce off of. Remind me to come back to reds.
Okay. Red's a little tricky.
It's very tricky. But I have a client that their brand color is red, and it was the business card client. And so we ran into something similar, not with the paper grain, but with, I got their cards printed on an uncoated sheet because they liked the uncoated sheet. Mm-hmm. And I brought it to them. They're like, it's the wrong red. And I was like, no, it's not. I mean,
this is uncoated.
Right. And I had not seen that, because sometimes your coated and uncoated aren't that different.
Yeah.
But this one sometimes is wildly different.
Wild.
And it's just something that I didn't think to check for them.
Right.
It was pretty early on in our relationship. And so I then went and they have an uncoated
red
and they have a coated red. And
checked both.
Lots of brands do it. They have an uncoated and a coated if it's very, very different.
Yeah. Wild. You did make me think, when I was a very young designer, and I was involved with the American Advertising Awards, the creative team, and we were doing this cool, I can't remember if it was when it was Cirque du Hatty or if it was our Addie and Wonderland theme. It was one of those. And we were working on it, and we had a little production party set up. We were at my friend Megan's house. We had everything. The whole committee was there, and we had to hand cut whatever it was. And I was cutting out everything. And one of the art directors that was there, he had more years in the industry than I did. And he looked over at me, and he knew I was fresh out of college at that point. And he was like, you're cutting that wrong. And I was like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
This is how I always cut them all through college. I know what crop marks are. I know how to use the X-Acto knife. What are you talking about?
I would have scat. I know what a crop mark is.
I know what I'm doing. Thank you, sir. And he was like, you're cutting off your crop marks. And I would just slice the whole side of the paper.
I know.
And then I lose one side of crop mark. So he had to teach me how to only cut within.
You're supposed to leave a frame. Almost.
Yeah. And I was like, man, smart call. Literally the whole all college chopped off all my crop marks.
But I think, how did you cut anything square?
I am a perfectionist. Yeah. It did not stop me. I would line up. I had fellow classmates that they were so bad, because back in the day we had to mount all our work on illustration board.
Yep.
And it had to have that 2-inch border and to have a transparent piece of paper over it to protect it. And sometimes it had a cover. Oh, it was real particular.
I don't remember that.
And I had some classmates that they were not to be trusted with spray mount. They were not to be trusted with X-Acto knives. They were their craft was poor. And I had students come to me, classmates come to me and be like, could you mount my project? And I would say yes. And there was one professor that called out another professor or student and was like, this is horrible. This is bad. And then he looked at mine. He's like, this is what we want.
Y'all were allowed to have somebody else mount your stuff?
Well, they didn't know. Well, so I was not sharing.
We would get a grade on our craft, though. So if somebody else mounted it, technically you're getting graded for somebody else's work.
I helped someone get much better grades.
Okay. I always got okay on like C plus B minus on credit. I did okay.
Yeah.
I did okay. But like a lot of times it was like complex stuff. It wasn't mounting on a board. I can do that.
Yeah.
Just fine. But it was like building roll folds and stuff like that. Yeah. And like, and I was like, I don't understand why I have to do this. And then I got my first full-time job and I absolutely had to do real mockups for clients all the time. And my work was good enough to be in a professional world. But like my professors were like, Eva, I'm like, I'm doing the best.
That was actually another thing. You
so much spray mount. I ruined so many tables with spray mount.
When, you know, that for the longest time, that's how you present it. You put everything on board and you presented it. Even in professional world, that's how you present it to a client. It was before we started doing like
everything on a screen,
Well, it was one of my first clients that they needed a social media campaign because it was, this was right, not even a campaign. It was just social media work. And it was right when Facebook pages were coming out and they wanted to get more in that world. And we put together all this work for them and we mock it up on illustration boards and we bring them into the conference room. We were so prepared. And the very first thing the client said to us was, we are here to discuss social work. Why do you have printouts? It was one of those moments that you're just sat there and you're like, you're not wrong. I'm showing you digital work in a printed matter. Like you are not wrong. So ever since then, I tried so hard to shift to showing, unless it was a print job, but if it was digital, I made the shift because that was real embarrassing to get called out by a client for presenting in that way.
Yeah.
And which is funny now, like everything's on a desk.
Everything's digital.
It is so rare that you have to do a printed mock-up these days.
To the point where
depending on the project, but it's rare.
Oh no. Like so it was funny when we almost all clubs have switched to all digital for the American Advertising Awards judging.
Yes.
But Midland for a minute we were still doing in person. And so I had to submit some of my print work in person. I had to pay to get it printed because like, because like, I don't have, what do you mean? Like I made the stuff and I sent, I sent digital proofs to the client and they approved it and they took the final files and had them produced.
Yeah. Like, I didn't get copies.
I don't have copies of all this stuff. And like, some of it was like posters. So it was fine. But some of it was like complex brochure work with all these folds, not more roll folds than I got.
Yeah.
Then I got, room for it. But speaking of the roll fold project, so like everything now I do digital mockups and put it on my website.
Yeah.
There's one thing I've taken real pictures of and it was hard because it was a 3D. You like open the envelope and like this box pops out. And so there's no way for me to mock it up.
Yeah. Cause there's nothing. Yeah.
Right. but I don't love my photos of it. I took them during the pandemic when I had not really had a good setup. I probably need to reshoot them. But anyways, the roll fold project is on my website, but it is not the way it actually looks because I couldn't get a digital mock-up to work with that many panels.
Because I came up with this like this insane whole thing. Project.
It was just like, it's so funny.
The universe was saying, don't do
stop
this.
It. And like, that's the thing. Like, I don't have a light box to shoot like my stuff in because like, I don't really need it that much.
Right.
But even if I were to invest in one, I can't get this one project in there. It's longer than the table.
Fair.
Like, where am I going to shoot this?
You know what? You just made me realize though, the only reason I caved and bought a ring light was because I needed better light to shoot my printed,
that's what I'm saying.
Printed work that was going to be submitted for awards.
Right.
But I'm like, the only reason I bought a ring light, I needed better light.
Right. I would have to get like a big piece of maybe white butcher's paper, but then like I have to zoom out so far. I made a decision.
Yeah.
I made a decision.
Choices were made
with that project. It's still one of my favorite projects.
Yeah.
I love it. On the rare occasion, I show people like physical examples of my work.
Yeah.
It's incredibly rare, but every now and then I have to do it. It's one of the first things I bring out.
Yeah.
That, and I did a project. You want to talk about, do you do a lot of custom dye work with any of your print stuff?
No.
Oh God, I've done so much.
Yeah.
We're like, there was this logo I had and it had a Q. And so like I did this mock. Like a metal dye.
Yeah. Okay. I thought you meant a like ink dye. Your ink dye.
No.
I was like, no, I have not had to do that.
I was like, really?
Like a die cut. Yeah
like okay. a metal dye.
It's been a while since I've done one, but yeah.
I haven't done one in a while, but there was a minute there where like, if there's any money in this budget, I'm going to make a custom die cut.
Yeah. Everything.
So there was this one where I made this like, there was a Q in the logo and I like the tail and the way it curved. And so I did something with that. And then there was one where I had these like fold outs and it had like one written at the top. And so I did a custom die for that. And so like I had to, my craft had to be really good then because I had to pitch these things and I had to like hand cut them out. Now, honestly, I don't think those things have ever been produced. So I paid all this money for these dies.
Isn't that frustrating?
But yeah.
Yeah. It is funny though, when I know that they'll actually put money into production versus just putting money into design. Mm-hmm. I'm like, ooh, now I can do even more because now I can look at all these cool things.
Is there a custom foil I can do? Yes.
I can put a TV in this print page.
Oh my gosh. Like one time it was like a Halloween or fall theme.
Yeah.
And I was not good at digital mock-up work. I wouldn't say I'm great at, but I'm much better at it now. So instead of somehow photoshopping the logo on a pumpkin, I carved this logo, the icon onto a pumpkin and took so many pictures of it outside during the golden hour, like right before, right after and during. And there's like, I had like 1,000 photos to go through. It was something.
Yeah.
I thought I was doing something.
We were doing things.
And it's funny because like you do all this work and like other designers probably think it's really cool.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are probably just like,
and
we move on.
Next project,
and
please.
Now I can do mock-up stuff so fast that people are way more impressed.
Yeah. It's so, and you can usually download like a ton of mock-ups. And it's like my younger years, I wish. I think about how much time was spent working on like a mock-up or something. I'm like, man, all I have to do is double click that layer.
Oh my gosh.
Put my design in there and we're done.
So I love sharing this story. One of my clients was running for mayor in Charleston, and bricks were part of his tagline or something about a brick in his tagline. And so one of the mock-ups I did for him, because I did the logo, and in the initial run of like concepts, I always do mock-ups in the concepts, because if you don't do that, you should do that, because people can't envision something that's on a white background.
If you're doing a logo project.
Or any project. I show them ad campaigns like out like on a billboard.
Yeah. Show it what it will look like in a mock-up, because then they can't envision.
And sometimes like maybe I just do one or two mock-ups.
Yeah.
For logos, I try to show them kind of a decent range.
Right.
But anyways, one of the mock-ups I did was like made it look like it'd been painted on a brick wall.
Yeah.
Because it was in Charleston and that felt very right.
Right.
And so he loved it. And so we ended up using it as part of the campaign assets with the logo that he approved. And so people were always commenting like, where is this? Like, like going around town. I was like, thank you. Like, I'm doing great. Funny.
Yeah.
So, love it. Well, okay. So I'm not a UX designer, but let me ask you this.
Yes.
I'm not going to call it a mistake. I just want your opinion on it.
Okay.
Like, is this a thing? Because I've only ever seen it. I saw it in, I had a reason to look at several websites in one market that's outside of South Carolina. And I had never seen this. And then I saw 10 websites in this one city that did this.
Oh.
And they aren't all done by the same person either, because I checked that as well.
Ooh.
The cursors aren't the normal little cursor, which is like usually the arrow or the hand.
Okay. But what were they?
Okay. So like one website, it was a football.
What?
A football.
Oh, why? Okay.
It was a football themed like website.
Okay.
One, it was an X.
No, I'm no. Unless you want your user to think you're closing everything.
Right.
Why would you put an X?
I can't remember what the other ones were. Maybe one was like
a
little art palette.
I feel like this is a developer that just found out how to change the cursor.
And they're like
CSS.
Talking about it at happy hour. And so
they
like,
went crazy with it. They just like, we got to have that football on there.
I saw it on 10 websites.
Know.
I found it as a user, I found it incredibly distracting.
My thing is, like, I appreciate when people try to do different stuff, but I also think sometimes less is more.
Especially in UX.
Especially in UX.
If it creates a stumble block, now you've lost
them. Yeah, because like, what you remember of this website now is that there was a football
floater. I don't remember what the website was about. I remember being irritated and confused why there was a football floating around the screen.
Which I would say you probably don't want to anger your user.
Is that your professional opinion?
That's my professional opinion. And I would like to offer that advice, which is don't anger the user.
I also think I try to tell people this all the time, not designers, because we know this, but particularly when I'm explaining design or sometimes just in conversation, I'm like, design should be quiet.
Yeah.
You shouldn't notice it.
Yeah.
like
let it happen.
Like just like good design should be quiet. It doesn't mean that like good design should also like stand out to you.
Yes.
But like the specific mechanisms of design should be quiet.
Yeah.
They should just work.
Yeah, for sure. And I know I said this earlier, but I think the biggest learning lesson with, if you were someone that's going from print to more UX work, is every little thing you do, please check in on mobile. There's been so many websites that I can tell they worked on it in desktop, which we work on in desktop a lot, and they did in desktop, and I can tell they did not look at it on, even made their browser smaller, because sometimes the content doesn't line up correctly.
Yeah.
And images won't work well on mobile. And I just encourage everyone, make sure you're looking. Because way back when I made that switch from going from print to web, I had a hard time breaking that mindset that like, everything's in this kind of contained area and everything's always the same size. And like, cause you talk about word breaks a lot with print, and that's kind of a luxury in the web world because my word break on desktop is going to be different than my word break on mobile. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you're not going to like how that's breaking, and there's some ways to force it, but like with body copy on pages, you can't force all of it. Mm-hmm. It's just, and like clients, you are building something that is easily edited by a client who is not a designer, and you have to know like, okay, well, I need to make sure I'm building something that they can't ruin. So it's tough too, but I just encourage, at the bare minimum, everything you're designing for desktop, look at what it looks like on a phone.
I'm laughing because I am terrible at remembering to do that.
A lot of people are, which is the lessons learned episode, I want to bring it up.
Right. It's because, so it's kind of like when I would, now I will remember to print everything and check it.
Yeah.
Because that's what my background is
in. Yes, yes, yes.
Because I will design something, not so much anymore, because I don't design nearly as much print stuff as I did when I was in-house. But like, I would design something and it would look great on my computer.
Yeah.
And then I'd print it and be like, oh my God, that font is like screaming at me because it's so big.
Yeah.
And so I would fix it. And so, and now a lot of the stuff has like a button that you hit and it shows you what it looks like.
Remember to check me.
It's a mindset thing, because like, if you don't do a lot of it, it's hard to remember to do it. But another interesting thing, this came up with a client in conversation in the last couple of days. We were testing something, like an email that was going out, and I was talking to her, and she was like, it looks weird on my phone. And then I was like, well, it looks like this on my phone. And then like, we had to have a conversation. I'm like, oh, do you have your font like at a different size on your phone than me? And she's like, I do. And I was like, so like, that is something. And it's part of like, when I
listen, I hate me some emails.
Well, like, but I was like, I can't control for that.
Yeah. That is why I designed so many emails, but I have such a frustration with it, because email clients are so behind.
They're so finicky
when it compared to a web browser. And
so annoying.
The way, like, Gmail styling makes me more angry than anything else.
But Gmail versus Outlook versus the client on your phone will show you the same email three different ways.
And it's so frustrating.
And you just go look at like, we're all like, you Google
and
it.
And that's why I'm like, don't overcomplicate email.
Yeah.
Don't overcomplicate email, because there's too many
emails. We just can't control for that. And I remember when I was in college, where I'm doing mostly print work.
Yeah.
But like, they're preparing me to do some web work. And so I remember I got this book specifically about like web design. Yeah. Right. And I remember reading through it. I remember specifically talked about like, you know, you can't control for like, and these things I innately know now, but like, they're like, you can't control for like monitor, like color calibration.
Right.
And there's like all this stuff stuff that you can't control for. So like web design is just different because how you have to do it.
Yeah.
You have to, it's just more fluid and you have to let go of some of these like very specific decisions that you've made because they may not translate like that.
Well, I remember always, I would always make print designers so mad because they would give me something for web and I'd have to go back to them like, this looks great. There's no web version of your font.
Oh yeah.
Please go back and change everything. Mm-hmm. And they'd be like, but we can't. I'm like, well, then I'm going to have to pick an alternative for you.
Yep.
Or you can pick a web font for me.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Because that's something you have to deal with brand building now. Yeah. But I remember reading that and I was so upset because part of what I love about being a designer is I get to make all these decisions.
Yeah.
I get to decide like the colors and the font and and how I adjusted the levels of the photo in Photoshop and the margins. And then you put it on a phone, which now is 95% of my work.
Yeah.
99% of my work, actually probably even more, less than 1% of my work is ever printed. So the vast majority of my work is viewed through a screen where I don't have those like, I can't control as much. And it just
actually, and going into that, how much do you actually pick Pantone colors anymore?
Oh, all the time.
Do you?
I do. Because when I build out like brands, I give them a Pantone color.
Right. Yeah.
But I start with Pantone and then I build backwards.
Yeah.
So I start with, because I have come up, this has happened where I come in as a consultant doing whatever and they need to print something and they need it to be correct.
Sure.
They need a Pantone color.
I was just curious.
But they don't have one. They have a hex code that doesn't directly translate to a Pantone color.
And that's frustrating when the hex code doesn't match up with the Pantone color.
So that's why I start with the Pantone because there's less of those and I build backwards. Yeah,
because sometimes the Pantone color doesn't look good. And since I'm in such a digital space, like obviously if it's branding, yes, I'm going to pick out a Pantone color for you. But if it's not, then if I'm working in digital, I'm going to use the hex code for all the work. And I'm like, it's just funny because I used to like live and breathe Pantone.
Yeah.
And I still am obsessed with it because we're designers.
Although I would like to talk to whoever put together Pantone Connect because it does not play nice the way it should
inside any of the Pantone programs. Fighting.
Well, but now I guess they're friends because you have
are
to,
they?
Well,
I keep going back and forth.
You cannot use the Pantone colors in any of the Adobe stuff now unless you have Pantone Connect, which
so frustrating.
I know, but I can just pay for it, so it's fine.
Yeah,
I know that's a level of privilege, but I just pay for it. But could you make the UX of the Pantone panel not hot garbage? It is so hard to work in. It is so hard to work in. Whose job is this?
I don't know.
Ugh. But yeah, no, I give them Pantones and build backwards. And then when I build brand guides for people, either I've created the brand and I'm delivering the whole thing, or sometimes I get in there and they don't have a brand guide. So I build them one. That's actually a lot of what I do. I will write out so now you can get Adobe or Pantone to convert the PMS color to the RGB and to the hex code.
Yeah.
I test them, but it used to be, and now it still won't convert to a CMYK. Yeah. So you got to go somewhere else to get your CMYK. But I go and spec all of those out because it used to be Illustrator would give you one and Photoshop would give you one and InDesign would give you one. And so I write it all out because I'm like, you want your different vendors doing the same thing. Or if you're using this internally, you want everybody like programming their PowerPoint deck or whatever.
Sometimes I find
It's not exact. You got to go check it.
It's not exact. And I'm always having to change. Like, I don't think I'm ever using the same hex code that they're.
But at least somebody has given you a base to start with.
Yes, I'd rather have a base.
And if it doesn't work right, then I've updated people's brand guides if it didn't make sense. But I write out the whole thing and I end up giving it to people who don't know what it means. I'm like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Somebody you work with might need this one.
Exactly.
Day. It's kind of like I texted Danielle the other day because I got an EPS file from a client and I was like, it's a real one. There's a real outline.
I even told her, like, I'm going to bet money that is not an actual EPS file.
Somebody even outlined the like rule line. Because first off, sometimes they just change a JPEG to a .EPS.
Right. And done because they
don't know.
And that's what I feel like I always have to clarify that like I need a vector file, not a
flattened image.
Right. So what
I, they're just thinking, oh, it's just a different file type.
And I'll just change it.
And I'll just change.
Now I've had other designers just change it. I'm like,
you don't actually know, do you remember doing? When we first met?
Mm-hmm.
And
what I posted,
I took Eva to lunch,
yep.
and I was training her to become communication chair for the club. And I was giving her all, I was giving her the brand guidelines and the logo files. And I gave her all of that. And I think I friended you on Facebook. Yep. And all of a sudden I see, this is when I learned Eva posts everything.
Yeah, I do. I do.
But she posted about our lunch. And
I didn't post about our lunch. I posted this meme that I made and I will find it. We'll put it in the, we'll put it in the episode without context. I'll find it. It.
Oprah going,
outline factor, look, CPS
files. And I was like, wow, I didn't know it would make her that happy. But then I thought about it. I was like, you know, we don't, it is a luxury.
It is. So like what'll happen is like, I'll open it and it's not a real file.
It is amazing how many clients don't have the proper logo files.
So what I tell, what I do when I give clients logos, because sometimes they just don't know what it is.
They don't know what it is. And then they don't save that file because they don't use that file.
So I tell them when I give them logo files, this is your original file.
Do not lose this.
If anybody ever asks you for a vector file, give them this.
This one.
So when I'm asking people for logo files and I get some like thumbnail ping that I can't use, I'll reply back. Can you give me your original logo file with an EPS or a lot of times the PDF was made in Illustrator.
Yeah. And sometimes you can still open it and still,
So that's what I'll ask. So like we either end up with files that you open it and you turn on the outlines and it's a blank box because it's actually a JPEG. Right. Or nobody outlined the fonts.
Oh yeah.
Or this happens more often than not. They outlined the font, but if there's like a rule line or something in the logo, nobody outlined that. So then when I scale it up, The weight of the line scales with it and it's wrong.
Yeah. Or when you can finally outline strokes.
Yeah.
That didn't used to be a thing. And I'm like, oh yeah, now we're really working.
Or I open it and it's just a bunch of layered shapes. And so nobody clipped out where the negative space is supposed to be. And then I'm basically.
Okay. I get real frustrated when they have like this really layered thing or if they have a white box. And when they're like, they wanted to make a negative space and they have a white box. I wish you guys could see how animated we are right now. White boxes. They're no defense. Stop it. There's like very easy tools in Illustrator
now. The Pathfinder little box now makes it so easy. You used to have to be
manually
so good at it.
Do all this. And now you like click a button. There's excuse for this.
Also, one more thing while we are on logos.
We are designer raging right now.
For the love of God.
Oh, here we go.
In your logo file, please put the company name. The amount of files that I get. Oh,
thank you.
Where it's just like main logo underscore color underscore one line. Yeah. And I'm like, who is it?
Yeah.
Put the company name in the logo file, please.
Preach.
Please do that. Please do that.
Here we go. Now I'm going to go back and look at all my, like, I think I usually put the company name. Oh, now I'm am I?
I do.
I think I do.
I do.
Yeah. I'm so particular with my file naming. I must.
I'm going to lose my mind because a lot of what I do is helping clients with like events and so, or they have a lot of sponsors.
Yeah.
So I'm getting 12, 13, 14, 15 logos sometimes in a day.
Yeah.
And I'm pulling everything together and just God.
Yep.
Just please write the company name in your logo.
Yeah, do it.
Or it's got some weird file name that makes sense for your system.
Exactly.
It's got a date on it. I'm like, what does this mean?
It's useless.
Anyways.
All right.
So, you know, we used to get some comments that like, we don't really talk about design. I think we talked about design today.
Yeah. We hope you're happy.
Yes. Y'all want to hear me rage about something else?
We'll
I don't know.
Keep having more designer hot takes.
Not, what do you call them? Cold cuts?
Well, cold cuts and hot takes. We'll do some bonus episodes on this.
I'm going to start keeping track of like, I should probably, if we want to find design rage, we'll just look back at our text thread. And see
I think I told Eva one time, I was like, we should do an event at a deli.
No.
And do hot takes and cold cuts.
No.
Do not steal that idea. I'll hunt you down.
I'm not. They can do it with you because I'm not going to do it.
Oh, whatever.
But yeah, I'll just have to go back and look. What did I text Danielle in all caps? And we'll just talk about that on the pod next week.
That's everything.
Yeah. Danielle. Anywho. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Yes, thank you.
We'll see you next week.
All right, bye.
Bye. Remember to follow us on Instagram @GhostBossPodcast. And also please like and review us on your favorite podcast app.